This is Annuity Straight Talk. Since 2008, your host, Brian Anderson, has helped clients nationwide navigate the complex market for annuities. With Brian's assistance, hundreds of clients have achieved a profitable and secure retirement. I would know, because Brian has answered many of my questions concerning annuities and retirement planning. So that you can benefit as well, let's get started. Here's Brian.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Annuity Straight Talk podcast, episode number 23. My name is Brian Anderson, founder and creator of All Things Annuity Straight Talk. If you didn't know that, you must be new to this podcast. Feel free to sign up on YouTube or any of your favorite podcast platforms to be notified when the next episode comes back. We've got 22 previous episodes. You can also search either of those platforms, YouTube or the podcast pages, for anything previous. Answers to your questions are there. If you don't have one, comment, give us a call. My number is 800-438-5121. Suggest a topic, ask a question, and we'd be happy to address your situation. Once again, by popular demand, I have, from Southern California, the one and only John Balmer for a third time, and he's already given me a fourth episode. Hey, John.
Brian, how are you? Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, you've got good ideas, and you've kind of grasped the concept of this. I need help creating content, and this one's a really good one for a specific subset of people out there. It's not specific to annuities, but general financial topics is something I think could help a lot of people. What do you say?
I think so too. You know, in terms of personal finance, you know, you're going to want to hit every angle. So the more you're informed, you know, knowledge is power. I think that's definitely something that some people can take something away from, learn something new, and see if they can apply it to their own situation, with whether it be working with us or working with their own advisor.
Hey, that's what we're doing. So again, the subject today is deferring capital gains tax, which for anybody with a highly appreciated asset, that might be kind of a tag word or a light bulb will go on and you say, whoa, really? I didn't know we could do that. And it is something that your firm works with specifically. It's a specialty you guys have, right, John? So why don't you tell us that it's called a deferred sales trust. Why don't you give us a little background, tell us about the nature of that?
Yeah, that's right. So one of our niche markets here at DST Wealth Management is the Deferred Sales Trust. It's offered by the estate planning team. It's been around for about 24 years, and it was actually a structure that was created or co-created by the founder of our firm. He's become a mentor to me, and that's kind of really what we've built our firm on. So the Deferred Sales Trust is our trade name, or the estate planning team's trade name. It's really a Section 453 installment sale. But the way that we've structured it, it's a legal proven and tested exit strategy for not only 1031 exchanges, but also it can be an alternative to a 1031, you know, failing 1031 rescue, or just an outright deferral of capital gains on highly appreciated assets, such as maybe the sale of a business, primary residence, investment property, highly concentrated stock positions, or, you know, we've even seen art collections be applied to this structure.
Okay, so you mentioned 1031 exchange, and anybody that's heavily into real estate investment understands a 1031 exchange allows you to defer capital gains, but how is this different?
Yeah, it's actually different because the 1031, albeit a great structure for the real estate investors out there, it's something that's actually been on the table as something that might be eliminated by Congress in the future. But it's really time constrained. You know, you have a lot of issues with the 1031. So you have the different timing rules. So 45 days to identify a new property to exchange into and 180 days to close that. And in this given, you know, in this real estate market that's just boomed in the last, you know, 10 or so years since the Great Recession, it's buying high, you know, selling high and buying higher. Sometimes it just doesn't make sense for people. You know, they don't want to go into an asset just to continue to defer the capital gain. So timing is an issue, 45 days to identify, 180 days to close. If you're looking at a large transaction, which is a lot of the clients that we work with, sometimes it can be really difficult. So you see a lot of failed 1031s. That's where we can step in and not only outright, you know, replace the 1031, but also rescue a failing 1031 exchange.
Okay. So if you're in the middle of one right now, you could say, hey, wait, maybe there's a different strategy. So one thing a lot of people are going to ask, it's not an elimination of capital gains. So that's kind of a disclaimer, correct? It's more a deferral of that.
That's right. That's right. That's why it's called the deferred sales trust. So how it works is, you know, quite simply, it's the trust. You enter into a specialized installment sale with the trust. The trust then simultaneously sells your asset to a designated buyer, receiving the sales proceeds. You, the seller, are not taking constructive receipt of any proceeds from that sale. And you're entering into an installment agreement where the proceeds from the sale are secured by a note that are negotiated between you and the trust on a secured basis.
Okay, so you don't take active receipt of any of it, but you do have discretion over what happens with the trust.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. The trust is managed by a third party trustee. So that helps to secure your assets, make sure that they're safe, that no one's going to be running off with them. And then you enter it into an installment note with the trust based on the terms that you have, you know, whether it be 5, 6, 8%. And then those trust proceeds can be invested in, you know, other real estate down the road. If you find the right opportunity, it can be invested in a diversified pool of investments, securities, stocks, bonds, cash, whatever you and your deferred sales trust advisor, your wealth advisor, determine is right and proper for the note of which you have assigned yourself.
Yeah. So the way I see it and kind of one of the ways we got together is, you know, we use Annuity Straight Talk, obviously a focus on annuities. That's also a part of your business when it comes to retirement planning. So you can, I mean, essentially within that trust, you can go back out and purchase any type of asset with it, right? Whether it be, you know, a balanced portfolio or another piece of real estate or even another business or a new painting, like the one behind you, the Picasso you got there.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You can actually, you know, the investment options are unlimited for those people who are super conservative and they want to invest the proceeds into an annuity like structure or life insurance. That can be an option. That's something that you're going to have to discuss with your individual wealth advisor on what the proper asset allocation is. You obviously want to meet the terms of the note so it performs over time. But you want to make sure that you're comfortable with the investments within the trust.
I'm just going to break it down to super simple terms to make sure I understand and everybody else does as well. So you sell the asset for gross value. Gross value lives in the trust, right?
Correct.
And then the note is certain distribution schedule from that trust, correct?
Yes, absolutely. So it allows you to pay your taxes over an extended period of time while utilizing the benefits of the entire proceeds of the sale to live off of. So you're not writing a huge check to the IRS within, you know, the next 6 to 12 months for those capital gains that are due. You're actually stretching the payment of those over a period of time. And that period of time on average is typically 10 years, but it can be sooner, it could be longer. It just really depends on how you negotiate the structure of your note with the trust.
Yeah. So essentially, instead of you're recapturing the lost opportunity cost of a big chunk of capital gains taxes, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so further compounding on that, you make more money. You'll still pay the tax, but you have a little more discretion over when you do it, right?
You do. For, you know, further compounding of those assets, you also have the ability to use the income from those assets to maybe mitigate some of those taxes in the future. You also have the opportunity to utilize those proceeds, you know, to live off of, to create an income, or just invest even more conservatively because you have a larger pool of assets from which to draw the income from.
Very interesting. I think it's very applicable to retirement income and obviously other investments, or just, you know, staying on top of it, really leveraging all opportunities for maximum accumulation over time. It sounds realistic to me. So, and now here's the question. I've got a friend, you know, one of my best buddies, he's firmly entrenched in the real estate market in Western Montana. I was talking to him right before we pulled this podcast. He's done 1031 exchanges and has rental properties and all that stuff. And, you know, the question being, where like a guy like him, you know, he might not be able to identify a property if he switches out, but he could actually utilize this structure to delay the sale or maybe purchase real estate, go back into real estate at more favorable conditions in a couple of years or so. Is that fair?
Yeah, he sure can. So how it works is, you know, it all has to do with the timing of the 1031. Obviously, if you're in a peak market and you sell that asset, do you really want to go into something that is the same type of value? Do you really want to go into something that has, you know, cap rates where they are? So what it allows is for ultimate flexibility in your purchasing options. So you can utilize the proceeds from the sale placed in the trust. And if you're a real estate investor, particularly where I'm from in Southern California, it's almost like a religion. People who usually buy and sell real estate, so they're always looking for the best opportunity in the marketplace. Well, if everything is up, you know, you might want to sit on the sidelines for a period of time, wait for that next market cycle to go through and buy it at a more opportune time. That deferred sales trust gives you the flexibility to do that, whereas a 1031, just that, you know, based on the timing constraints, just doesn't offer that. It also offers you the ability to actually reset your depreciation schedule when you go out and repurchase real estate. That's one advantage of this structure. So it gives you a ton of flexibility in order to go out and rebuy real estate, if that's your thing. You know, most of our clients, they've owned real estate for a very long time. They want to get out of it. They are, maybe it's a mom and pop and they own several properties, or they're selling a business that has real estate attached to it. They don't want to necessarily have to manage that property throughout. The kids don't want it. They want the cash. So it allows them the opportunity to have just a ton more flexibility. So it really gets you away from that tenants, toilets, and trash, and allows you to have the similar type of income without having to actually manage the physical asset of real estate or managing the business. Just gives you a ton of flexibility.
You know, in my business, I've talked to hundreds and hundreds of people since I've been online for the last 12 years or so. And I know a fair number of people have been really successful in real estate. And that's kind of a big one for this, I would assume. Business and real estate are probably the two biggest areas. I'm just kind of guessing. But, you know, there's a lot of people that have real estate. Maybe they're not getting out of it entirely, but there's places where, you know, the value of the property kind of outstripped the rents they were getting. What do you say? Toilets, trash, and whatever else. They kind of get tired of it, or maybe want to pare back their holdings. I mean, a lot of people come and say, hey, I want to sell this property. They've got depreciated, they've depreciated the value of it. So their capital gains hit is higher. That brings up a good question, something I think you mentioned. But, you know, they think, well, what can I do with an annuity? An annuity doesn't have to be part of it. But, you know, they look at saying, well, I'm going to pay 20, 30% depending on their income tax bracket, their state, you know, capital gains bracket. So they could be paying a lot, and that, you know, kind of gives them an opportunity to do that. Where if you look at it and say, wow, if all you're going to do is generate income from this anyway, why don't you start with a bigger chunk of money? Kind of makes sense for a lot of people, I think.
I think it does. You know, it allows them to have that diversified, you know, pool of assets, and whether that the income from that trust come from, we do have clients that have diversified portfolios of stocks, bonds, and cash, along with annuities. That's certainly an appropriate structure as long as it performs for the note. It's definitely an option when you're talking about the investment of the proceeds within the trust to pay that income stream per the terms of the note.
On a side note, I did say real estate. You brought something up. So somebody has a piece of real estate that they've depreciated down to zero. So what happens is, you know, you buy a piece of real estate for $250,000. Maybe it's a rental property and you get to depreciate the value of that over time. But what it does is if you sell that now for $500,000, the actual cost basis is lower because of depreciation. That's fair, correct?
Yeah.
So if you enter into a deferred sales trust with the proceeds of that sale and then maybe enter into another property with it, what happens to the depreciation schedule?
What you're able to do, because it's a brand new transaction, you're able to get a brand new depreciation schedule on that property. So let's say you've depreciated, you know, your former property all the way down. You're having to deal with issues of depreciation recapture and things like that. You can actually take this as an investment, move it into the trust, and then actually go out and purchase a new piece of property at the opportune time without the constraints of the 1031, and then actually have a new depreciation schedule on that piece of property altogether.
And so, I mean, that creates an even bigger benefit for anybody who has, you know, been running rental properties for a long time. I think most of the people I talk to that are wanting to get out of a rental property might have been, you know, maybe they're in their 70s. They made more money by, you know, managing it themselves. Some people hire a manager for that, but, you know, they get tired. But if you basically regain that depreciation as well, and creates a better basis to plan for and draw in the future.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, more often than not, we see people who do sell these properties. They realize that, you know, maybe they want to go back into real estate, but more often than not, they don't. It's, you know, real estate's an illiquid asset. You know, they're maybe older, maybe they're in retirement. They just want to raise the cash. So, you know, having the liquidity of a diversified portfolio of assets within the trust gives them a lot more flexibility and a lot more options. So more often than not, you know, we enter into these discussions about maybe purchasing real estate down the line through the structure of the trust. But, you know, I'd say, you know, in my circumstance, it's never happened again. People just don't buy real estate again. They're generating their rental income or something similar through the investments within the trust that's in a diversified portfolio. They seem satisfied, and so they don't want the hassle of going through of purchasing that new piece of property. So oftentimes people just don't end up going back into real estate. There's other types of real estate that you can go into, institutionally managed real estate in some sort of a fund structure, but buying actual a physical asset is something that I don't see very often. Now that they've gotten out of it, they kind of realize the freedom of the income stream that they have. They have access to capital if they actually need it. Obviously, they have to pay the taxes on any withdrawals or any income stream, but it's stretched out over time. So it's a lot more advantageous to the seller, to the note holder.
No, that makes a whole lot of sense. So, you know, the first question when I brought it up to my buddy, he said, I've never heard of it before. What's one of the reasons you would see why people, maybe an accountant or an advisor of some sort, may not have told someone about this?
Sure. Well, you know, I mean, there's a lot of circumstances where, you know, when you're talking about the real estate advisor, I mean, let's take a look at how real estate agents work. Most of them work on commission, or they, you know, eat what they kill, so to speak. And so the ability for them to not only get the sale of that transaction or that piece of property, but also the buy commission, you know, we're talking about straight commission, is very lucrative for some agents. And real estate agents are great, but their incentive structure is a little bit out of line versus, you know, a lot of the money that we manage at our firm is on a fiduciary basis, on a fee-based business model. So whether, you know, we just want to be able to see the best transaction or the best pool of assets for the client, we have to do what's in their best interest. The commissioned real estate agent, so to speak, sometimes sees a lot of money on the table. If they sell a piece of property and they buy it within a 1031, their incentive is much more so for themselves, and not to take away from their business model, but that's just kind of how that is. So yeah, what we found is the real estate agents or the real estate advisors that we've educated actually get more listings by utilizing our structure, because they're actually bringing something more to the table to their client than just a buy and a sell of a piece of property. So typically, if an investor has one property, they have more than, they might have a portfolio, and, you know, to differentiate themselves, bringing that advantage of the capital gains, because everyone is bringing a 1031 to the table. Every real estate advisor is touting 1031s or Delaware statutory trusts, which we can get into. But really, having a real estate advisor that understands what we do and understands that they can get the other side of that sale down the road just brings a lot of value to their clients as well, and to their practice. It increases their listings, you know, more often than not.
Real estate agents are no different than investment managers or, you know, insurance product salespeople. Like, I mean, there's really good ones that do good stuff, and there's some people that are just in it to make a buck at whatever cost. I mean, it's not, you know, so yeah, we can't paint any one business with a broad brush. There are a lot of different types of people out there.
No, absolutely. And real estate agents are really the lifeblood of our business. They bring us a lot of these deals, but it's an educational process. in showing them how they can increase their business and increase their listings by utilizing our structure of the deferred sales trust rather than just continually doing 1031 exchanges. So I didn't want to paint them in a bad light. I just kind of wanted to, you know, it's an educational process that we take them through. And, you know, those that get it are wildly successful. Those that don't, they don't utilize the structure and they miss out on different opportunities.
Well, they may not be the most successful agents in the first place. So it seems like, you know, the guys that are doing a lot of volume would probably want to use a little bit of everything and want to have another tool, I would say. So
absolutely. Just provides another arrow in your quiver. Yeah,
right. So very interesting stuff. This is the big question. A lot of people are going to want to know, what are the costs involved in doing this?
So the deferred sales trust is obviously, there's a cost for legal upfront. It's typically negotiated. It's 1.5% of the sales price up to the first $1 million. And then it drops down to a certain percentage on any dollar thereafter. So let's say you had $1 million piece of property. You're looking at setting up a one-time legal fee to set up the structure. It's about $15,000 or 1.5%. That fee indemnifies the note holder for any IRS audits in the future ongoing. So there's no, you know, were the structure to ever be challenged by the IRS, that allows the tax attorneys that set up the structure to defend that in federal court.
Yeah, the attorneys retain the liability. So it could seem like a lot, but that, well, and as things do, I mean, rules change all the time. Typically tax rules, there's a grandfather clause to most all of them. But you never know. If you don't work with the right guys, you don't set up the note and all the assets correctly, you might want to have that insurance. That's why you call John. That's why you call John. Make sure it's done right.
It's definitely something that you know, it's worth the cost. That money can come out of escrow. Doesn't have to be paid out of pocket necessarily. And then you do have we're hiring a third party trustee to make sure your assets are safe and secure and that the investment advisor that has brought this structure to you is doing their job and performing to the note's obligation to you, making sure that all the taxes are paid, making sure that all the reporting is in line. So there's no hiccups. So there's an ongoing fee with a trustee. That's an annual fee that's paid directly out of the trust. And then there is an investment advisory fee, depending upon how you negotiate that fee with your investment advisor. The total all-in structure up front for the trust is typically 1.5% on the first million. And then there's typically an ongoing fee of about 1 to 1.5% ongoing, which is not any more than you might pay your investment advisor to manage your IRA or your 401k or your own diversified portfolio of assets.
But that's going to depend on what you purchase with those assets, right?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, the way we look at it is the cost benefit analysis of doing the deferred sales trust far outweighs the taxes that you would pay to the IRS in one lump sum. So, you know, it generally pays for itself and then some over time.
Well, that's where, I mean, again, that question is just for disclosure, right? I mean, everybody's going to look, oh, wow, that sounds great, but I bet it costs an arm and a leg. And like you said, cost benefit, you figure out what, you know, whether, you know, the mass supports the deferred sales trust over just an open sale. So that's a decision you got to make. You just have to have everything disclosed to you up front. And then obviously there's probably a little bit of negotiation that goes into all those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And having that transparency of price is something that's advantageous to the client, to the end user. They know up front. In the example of how we utilize the deferred sales trust to rescue a 1031. Let's say you're already in a 1031 exchange transaction and you're dead set on buying another piece of property. You've identified those. And for some reason, you know, you find out about the deferred sales trust. We can actually at no cost set up the structure for you. And unless that 1031 exchange fails and you default into our structure, there's no cost to do that. So a lot of people who their full intention is to go into a 1031 and purchase another piece of property, sometimes they know, hey, you know, we've done this before. 1031s don't always go so smoothly. We want to have options. We're able to set up the deferred sales trust at no cost to that client. And we don't charge them that legal fee or setup fee to utilize that. But in case they need that parachute, it's there, it's available. And if they happen to, if the 1031 happens to fail, or they happen to not be able to identify the three properties within the 45-day limit, they can always default, fail the exchange, roll back into our structure, continue the tax deferral, and then we charge them that legal fee. So that's one of the advantages of using our firm to do that.
Yeah, just like a little insurance policy.
It's absolutely insurance policy.
Oh, that's very interesting. So, final question I got for you. I got a lot of different ideas, but I'm not going to put you on the spot. You know, I'm a thinker, I'm a dreamer, so I like always looking for different angles, but we'll save that for a case-by-case basis. So how does somebody, if they're interested, learn more about the deferred sales trust?
Sure. Well, they can either contact you, Brian, and you can get them in touch with me, or they can reach out to me directly. My phone number here is 949-478-2256. Or they can actually go look up my, you know, the nice thing about being part of the estate planning team and DST Wealth is I actually have a website that will provide you an illustration on the comparison of doing a, an outright sale versus utilizing the deferred sales trust. We can run an illustration for you. It's a really helpful tool in showing you what type of taxes you're going to be able to save by doing one or the other. That's got to make sense for the client, but they can go to my website. That's www.mydstplan.com/clearsight. That's a useful website that you can use, or you can just get in touch with me and I can run you an illustration and show you exactly how your situation would look.
It sounds like a pretty quick, easy process for just kind of an initial, exploratory question, right?
Absolutely. Sure it is.
Okay. Awesome. Well, hey, thank you, John. I love good ideas. That's what we're all about, whether we're talking about retirement income planning or just tax advantage strategies. Again, this is not advice. We're not telling you to do one thing or another. This is, the information is general in nature, just trying to seed ideas for people so we can start thinking about how to play offense in retirement. Instead of playing defense, all everybody talks about taxes and it's like real defensive. Oh, taxes. Put you on offense, put the ball in your hands and drive it to the hoop. So thanks, John. I appreciate your input today. And it was a great topic. And I think a lot of people will get some value out of it.
Brian, thanks for having me again. I appreciate it. I look forward to seeing you soon.
You bet. Well, again, this has been Annuity Straight Talk podcast, episode 23, how to defer capital gains tax. My name is Brian Anderson. Thank you, John Ballmer, for joining us. And if you want to subscribe to the YouTube channel or the podcast platform, you will be notified when a new episode is released. Contact Annuity Straight Talk for more information or contacts to a specific professional that can handle this for you. The number is 800-438-5121, or hit the green schedule a call button on any page of the website. I would be happy to connect you with John and his team, and we'll look forward to another great topic from you. You got something good for us next time, don't you?
I think I have something in the ammo box for you.
All right. I like ammo boxes. And by popular quest, I might have the rifle back in the corner. So I got a couple people say, where'd the rifle go? Well, I left it in my horse trailer. So I'm not a total savage, but all right. Awesome. Thanks, John.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And we'll see you next week for episode number 24. Have a great day. Goodbye.
You have been listening to Annuity Straight Talk. The preceding information is for informational and educational purposes only and does not represent tax, legal, or investment advice. The views expressed by guests on this program are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Annuity Straight Talk or its partners. No information presented today should be acted upon without meeting with a qualified and licensed professional. It is important that you read all insurance contract disclosures carefully before making a purchase decision. Guarantees are based on the financial strength and claims paying ability of the insurance company.